everybody, and welcome to a brand new podcast.
Oh yes, it's us.
My name's Ben.
And my name is Keith.
And we are Simmons and Simmons, a father and son double act.
And that name took us ages to think up.
It certainly did. Now, why are we here with you? Because in these difficult times, we wanted to bring you a little slice of entertainment for your ears. And we are observing social distancing regulations. That is why my dad is on the phone while I'm recording this.
But I am only the other side of the room.
No, you're not. You're about 20 miles away in Dartford.
That's true, yeah.
I'm in Essex. My dad is in Dartford. So we're not close together. So we're not spreading any illnesses or anything like that.
But really, it's because we couldn't afford the toll money at the Dartford Tunnel.
Yeah, it is.
We're not working.
Yeah, exactly. I hope everybody is getting through these difficult times as best as possible. And hopefully we can bring a little bit of humour to you in this podcast, The Feel Good Factor, right now.
Oh, God, is that what you're planning? Humour?
Oh, weren't you?
No.
I thought we could start off with a section entitled SAS, Who Dares Facts.
Right.
So I think it would be good to tell the listening lovelies some interesting facts about each other that maybe they don't know.
That's nice to have that thrown at you, right? I thought we should have planned this.
Yeah, that could have helped. But no, come on, there must be something impressive you can tell people that they might not know about you.
Well, I suppose it's supposed to be impressive, this. I did run the London Marathon in 2004.
Oh, yes.
Well, I say ran it. I ran some of it. I had to walk some of it as well.
Yeah.
My time was disgusting. It was over 6 hours.
Right,
but
yeah.
I did complete the course, and I was got into it by a lovely lady called Jennifer Henderson, who was the granddaughter of the great comedian Dickie Henderson.
Ah, yeah.
And she talked me into going in for it, so I ran it on behalf of the Outward Bound Trust, which was her set-up, and also the Grand Order of Water Rats.
That's right.
And managed to raise £5,000, so I suppose that was quite good.
That was impressive, and I quite enjoyed the fact that I was there to support you with my wife Hayley and my mum Fran, and we were meeting up at different points along the course to try and find you. And obviously it's difficult for supporters because you don't know how long the person you're supporting is going to take. And I remember we got to Rotherhithe, which is something like 10, 11 miles along the course, and were waiting to see if you'd gone by already. And then a bloke in an 8-foot rhinoceros costume ran past really slowly. And I was filming on a camera and said on the commentary, "Well, Dad, I guess we've missed you, because if that bloke's ahead of you, you've got no chance." And then you appeared about 20 seconds later.
You were right, I had no chance. But I always remember the weather was terrible. It was raining most of the time.
Yeah.
And after about 2 miles, I overtook a guy on crutches and I patted him on the back and said, "Brilliant, keep going." And at 17 miles, that guy overtook me. That's how bad I was doing. When I finally crossed the line, the relief, you know, when you finish the thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was given a medal, and it's upset me ever since, because...
Why?
I thought the medal would have my name on it, and they got it wrong, got the sex wrong and everything. It says Flora on it, and I was really upset about that.
Don't be ridiculous. That's the margarine company that was sponsoring the marathon at the time.
Well, I never realised that.
Good job you're not doing it now, because it's sponsored by Virgin, isn't it? You don't want that written on the medal.
No, mind you, your mum is keeping you 6 foot away from me all the time.
Fair enough, right. So that's quite an interesting fact. My interesting fact is, believe it or not, I started off in show business at the age of 9, because in 1987 I auditioned to be the Milky Bar Kid out of a group of about 1,000 kids.
I remember it well, being there with you.
And I came in the top two. I got down to the last two to be the Milky Bar Kid, and I was indeed the Milky Bar Kid. The other guy got to just do the television advert, and I got to just do personal appearances for a year all around the country on carnival floats and at photo shoots and things like that. People always said to me, "You must have got loads of free Milky Bars." I don't remember getting any.
No.
Which was rubbish.
You drew the short straw, I think, if he got the television adverts.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Obviously some money in that, and I think you just got some expenses for going to places. I remember you and Mum had to go to Weymouth.
That's right. We did a carnival in Weymouth, I remember, a carnival in Battersea, a couple of others, and some photo shoots and things, but sadly lacking in white chocolate.
Yeah, true. So when you go into a bar, do you say the Milky Bars are on me?
I rarely say that, just because I don't want anyone to take it seriously.
Quite.
Right, now we come to a section called Name Drop Corner. Now, obviously, when you've had a career of over 50 years in the entertainment industry, and
fancy starting when I was two.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And me of over 30 years, we've both worked with some interesting people. So I just wondered if you wanted to pick out anyone in your career and tell a story about them.
Yeah, worked with and met a lot of great people. But I do a talk called Name Dropping. I go up. One of the stories I love to tell is absolutely true. A lovely guy, John Inman, who of course was Mr. Humphreys in Are You Being Served?
I'm Free, of course.
I did a pantomime with him, with your uncle, my brother Alan, when we were the Simmons brothers. We did a panto, Mother Goose, in Birmingham.
Yeah.
In 1983. And then we did a tour with him as well, all over the country. And he was a really great guy, because he was not only a good comedy actor, he was a good comedian. He used to do an act as the old comic Frank Randall.
I was going to say, everyone knows of his character from that and knows he was a brilliant dame in pantomime, but what did he do as an act when you were touring? Yeah,
this main thing was as Frank Randall, I remember, he dressed up as. But the story he told me this, and he said it was absolutely true, this.
Yeah.
Back in the 60s, he had to go to Dubai on business, and his mum, who was a bit hard of hearing, lived in Lytham St Anne's, which you and I know well for doing panto.
Yeah, absolutely.
And she said to him, like any mum would, when you get to the place you're going, she said, please phone me and let me know you've arrived safely. Well, he said it was a really long flight, about 14 hours, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And when he got there, he hadn't arranged anything. He didn't know what money he needed, didn't know where phones were, what number he had to dial. So he had to sort it all out. And it took him ages, but eventually he said he dialed this long set of numbers and got through to Lytham St Anne's. And his mum picked up the phone and said, hello. And he said, hello, Mum, it's John. And she said, who? He said, it's John, I'm in Dubai. And she said, goodbye, and put the phone down. Absolutely true, yeah.
That is a brilliant story.
I told the story as well. But, a great, great character, John, sadly missed.
Yeah, definitely. Well, my story, I'm not going to reveal the person it's about until I get to it at the end of the story because of
this has got a tag, has it?
The shock value, yeah. For over 10 years, I worked for quite a well-known costume character company. If you're not familiar with that, basically giant sort of mascots and cartoon characters that are brought to life by actors wearing suits and being inside them. So you might get a Scooby-Doo costume or a Bob the Builder costume or something like that. Basically,
I never knew there was anyone in those costumes. I thought they were the real thing.
Yeah. But basically, there's a company called Rainbow Productions that creates these costumes and then owns the licenses to put them out. Anything that isn't Disney, they have licenses for, basically. And I worked for them for over 10 years, and we'd put on theatre shows and I'd compare those shows. We'd do sort of talks to children and storytelling and things like that. But the kind of bread and butter work was going to shopping centres and having photographs with members of the public with the characters. And for every person in a costume, you had to have a minder to stop them getting beaten up, basically. But also to organise the appearances and liaise with the parents and the children and make sure it was all done properly and safely. So that was the kind of sort of more day-to-day stuff. Every now and again, you'd get TV appearances with these characters, which were far more exciting, obviously. And maybe in another one of these, I'll reveal about my time at the National Movie Awards. But that's not this story. This story...
No, I know that story, so I'm not sure what one you're telling at the moment.
Well, this story is about a time when we were on CD UK, which was the ITV Saturday morning show fronted by Anton Deck.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And I had to take SpongeBob SquarePants to CD UK. And the nature of the costume means most often it was a female inside the costume. And right. they told us, because the costume was so large, you couldn't have a normal dressing room. You'd have to go in the green room. It was the only place big enough to hold it. So we did a sort of rehearsal, and before we were going to go live, they said, right, go, you can go and get out the costume for a minute. And so we went to the green room, and the slightly bizarre boy band Blazing Squad were already in the green room. So there's this girl sort of trying to change in a sort of pair of shorts and T-shirt and stuff and feeling a bit awkward. So I left her to get on with it and came and stood outside, so I didn't want to hang around with Blazing Squad, obviously. And I stood in the corridor, quite a narrow corridor in the TV studio. And I was just sort of keeping myself to myself for a minute, just thinking about how it was going to work. And a guy came and stood next to me, about 3 feet away. And I thought,
social distancing then, but not enough.
Yeah. I thought, why is he? He's quite close. Then I realised the makeup room was opposite in the corridor. And this guy turned to me and he said, hello. And I turned to him and went, hello. And it was Justin Timberlake.
Ta-da!
So yeah, and then he went into makeup, and genuinely two minders stood outside the makeup room so no one could get to Justin Timberlake. And I thought, well, I've already said hello to him. It isn't like I wanted a photograph or anything, but he's in a TV studio. The public can't get to him. What do they think's going to happen? Like, loads of researchers and production assistants are going to come in. But they had, he had these minders.
That's great, actually, just meeting up with someone just like that, casually as that.
Yeah, so, definitely, definitely.
That's fun.
Right, now, the next part of the show, which could cause controversy, is our is our joke contest.
You did warn me the other day that we might do a joke contest.
So you've prepared something.
I've been going through my joke book.
Right, right. Well, also, I'm going to encourage listeners to go onto Facebook, and there will be a poll relating to this moment of the Feel Good Factor, asking who you think has provided the better joke. So you can vote.
This is a worry.
You can vote for Keith or vote for Ben in the joke contest.
Okay.
But so I will go first then, and then we'll see.
God bless.
All right, you get to go last, so you've got an advantage already. But anyway, so basically, this is my joke. When you work in the world of comedy, frequently you get people come up to you and say, tell us a joke. And I hate that. I hate being under pressure. It just makes me want to curl up into a ball and throw myself down a hill. But that's just how I roll.
That's it, is it?
Oh, if you have to ask, that's obviously good. Yeah. That's mine. Let's hear yours.
Okay. A man was sitting in a restaurant, and suddenly the doors burst open and a guy walked in on his hands, stark naked, walked up to the counter, grasped a jam tart between the cheeks of his bottom, and then walked out again, still on his hands. And this guy couldn't believe it, and he looked up at the waitress. He said, well, that's unusual, isn't it? She said, it is. He normally has a donut.
Brilliant. Well, at least I didn't have to ask if that was the end of your joke. So. But we will leave it up to the listeners to decide which was best. So once you've listened to this episode, you'll find beneath the link to it on Facebook a poll asking who won the joke contest for the episode one of the Feel Good Factor. So you can cast your vote for either Ben or for Keith.
Fantastic. Okay.
Right, now then, to tie it all up, I thought, obviously, we've had long careers in the entertainment industry, but we've also had a combined, well, I won't say, but over 100 years life experience, so we must have amusing tales from any facet of life to share with our listeners as well.
If only.
But it could be career-related, or it could be non-career-related, I guess.
Oh, right, yeah, okay.
Share an amusing story. You can go first.
Okay. Well, this is career-related. The very first pantomime I did in 1968 was at the Theatre Royal Bath. In fact, you and I went to Bath and did a really, interesting video in the theatre and so on.
Good plug, yeah, great.
Yeah, no, it was good, that. I enjoyed doing that.
Yeah.
But when we were doing this show, during it, your Uncle Alan, my brother Alan,
yeah,
was suddenly taken ill during the run of the pantomime, and he was being vomiting in the digs we were in. It was awful. He was in a terrible state.
Right.
And so your mum and I went down to the theatre to tell Frank Maddox, who was the director, producer and owner of the theatre, that Alan wouldn't be able to make the matinee show that day because he was in a terrible state.
Yeah.
And before we left, we said we'd called a doctor, and a doctor was going to see your uncle. So we went down to the theatre, and I got in to see Mr. Maddox. I always called him Mr. Maddox, never Frank. I said, "I'm totally sorry, Mr. Maddox. Alan's been taken ill. The doctor's going to see him, but I don't think he'll be able to be in the show this afternoon." And I always remember it. Frank Maddox said, "Oh, what am I going to do?" What's up with him?
Yeah, great sympathy there. Yeah.
Anyway, so that was it. So it was left I would have to go on my own because we were doing a vocal spot in the show as well. So I sorted out how I'd do it. And we walked back to the digs. And by the time we got back to the digs, there was an old lady in there who used to look after it.
Yeah.
And she was called Mrs. Norris. And I can still see this in my mind, because we went in the front door and looked up the stairs, and Mrs. Norris was like in silhouette at the top of the stairs. And she looked down at us and she said, "I've got some bad news for you, dears. He's gone." And just for that split second, I thought she meant your uncle had died.
Oh,
and she meant he'd been taken to the hospital. But for Alan always says, "I thought for a minute, oh, 50% more money for me," but I didn't. I actually thought the same as Frank Maddox. "Oh, what am I going to do?" Yeah. He was taken into the hospital, and he was actually in there for 6 performances. He missed, and it turned out he had a cracked rib.
Right.
Which had happened to him. He was doing a comedy fall in the show, and because this was our first pantomime and we were still fairly new to comedy, he wasn't falling correctly and cracked a rib.
Wow.
But, he was then sent home and sent back to the theatre and didn't even strap him up or anything. And
so you had to do six.
To carry on.
You had to do 6 performances on your own?
On my own, singing, I think I was doing 3 or 4 songs.
And did you sort it out between you that for those 6 performances you got more money?
No, I don't think we did that, actually. In those days, we were not worried about that sort of thing. It was just getting back and getting fit and well again. So money didn't come into it.
Well, it's a good story, I've got to say. When I was thinking about stories I could tell, it's another one. Again, it was for the company Rainbow Productions. And you would frequently get given hire vehicles to drive around in, and usually it would be a hire car. You'd take the artist who was performing and the costume you had to wear to various venues and just park the car, and that was it. But I got to do this slightly more involved job for a week or so that involved carrying around a white fluffy sofa as well as the costume, because they were white aliens that used to fly around in a cartoon in space on a sofa. And so,
what were they called?
Oh, God, I can't even remember. It might have been Bing and Bong. That was it. Tiny Planets with Bing and Bong. Yeah. And it was a cartoon, but obviously they created a costume for it. So one of the days we had to go to a shopping centre in Croydon. And when we arrived, because we had a sofa, it had to go in quite a large van. And obviously you can't park a large van in multi-storey car parks like you would park a car. So we found this alternative security and staff car park that we were directed to by the management. And I can only describe it as it was half in the open air, and then half of the multi-storey car park roofs were overhanging it.
All right.
And we drove in, and without really thinking about it, I didn't appreciate that we were going up a ramp. And we got to the top of the ramp, and there was this terrible crunching noise. And the girl I was with said, "What's that?" And I said, "I think I've hit the roof of the van on that overhanging part of the car park." And we got out and realised I had done that on this concrete structure. And this girl said to me, "You've done it now. You might as well carry on driving forward and drive round and park." And I said, "Yeah, okay." Not realising I wasn't at the top of this slope yet. I carried on, tried to accelerate, and could hear more and more crunching. And then he realised we'd stopped moving, even though I was accelerating. got out and looked, and basically had now concertinaed part of the roof of the van, which was destroyed, and the tyres were unable to turn, and the back ones were lifted up slightly. And it became a whole terrible sequence of events where I tried to reverse, it wouldn't now reverse either, it wouldn't go forward, it was just stuck and wedged. And we realised we were blocking the entrance to this car park. This took about an hour because of panicking, phoning the office, explaining what had happened and everything like that. Them asking if we could still do the job, getting another vehicle to come and take them on to another job or something. And me panicking about it, the only solution ended up being letting the air out of all the tyres of the van and getting a load of builders from a nearby building site to sit in the back and weigh it down. There were seven blokes sat in the back of it. Then it
they sat on the sofa.
They could have done, yeah. That freed it and we could get the van out. The girl got taken somewhere else to carry on with the job. I had to wait for the AA to come and blow all the tyres back up. And then when I got the van back, there was a hole, like a big, at least sort of 12-inch hole in each corner of the roof of the van. The structure that supports it in the middle and the inside was all buckled inwards. Basically, the roof was totally ruined. And as a result of that, the company changed their driver policy and said that if there were any accidents in any hired vehicles from that point onwards, the driver had to pay for the cost of it. And then if it was proven by insurance it wasn't their fault, they'd get it reimbursed. But they only changed that policy because of me having that accident.
Yeah, God, terrible.
I wasn't allowed to drive for them for a few months after that.
Did they ever use you? Yeah, they did use you again, didn't they?
Yeah, they used me for about 8 more years. So
yeah, so they were forgiven. But don't ever ask to borrow a van from me.
Yeah, I was forgiven, but definitely not forgotten, I think.
No, I bet.
So there you go. Well, that's sort of bringing this first episode to a close. And it's nice to get together over the phone and do these, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. Thank you for inviting me to do this with you. And to all the listeners, hope you've enjoyed some of the stuff we've talked about.
Hope you're getting through any isolation, quarantine, social distancing as best as is humanly possible, and we wish you all to stay safe and take care, everyone. But from me, Ben, and from my dad, Keith, it's bye for now.